This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Deborah Takahashi. She's a branch librarian for Pasadena Public Library and is the author of Serving Teens with Mental Illness in the Library. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from Mometrics and from listeners just like you. Find out how you can help support the show by going to circulatingideas.com/support. With library budgets constantly shrinking, it's getting harder and harder to provide the resources your library patrons want and need. That's why the folks at Mometrics Test Preparation created the Mometrics e-Library. Through their e-Library portal, Mometrics offers study guides and practice questions for over 1,800 different exams covering college entrance, graduate school, nursing, medical, teacher certification, civil service, I'm counting this on my fingers, I'm running out of fingers, and many other careers and fields of study. All fully customizable and at a fraction of the cost of printed books. It's like having an entire library of test prep materials all at your fingertips. So, save space, save paper, and save money with Mometrics eLibrary. To get a free demo and 10% off your first purchase, visit goelibrary.com and let them know you came from Circulating Ideas by using the promo code PODCAST. That's goelibrary.com, promo code PODCAST. So Deborah, welcome to Circulating Ideas.
Thank you.
You are on the show today mostly because you have a new book out called Serving Teens with Mental Illness in the Library. And I wanted to get started by asking how you got started in librarianship in the first place. What got you into the field in general? And then how did you kind of come to focus on teens?
That's kind of a long story, but I'll try and be brief with it. It happened when I was literally months away from graduating college. I had every intention of being a high school English teacher, and when I was going through the final parts, which is the student teaching part, it didn't turn out to be what I wanted it to be. So I was kind of in a crisis, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. But just by luck, by pure blessing, I walked into my local library and saw that they were hiring for a youth services librarian, a position, and since I didn't know what I wanted to do, I was like, you know what, let me just apply and see where this takes me. And I did, and I got the job, and I guess you can kind of say the rest was history, because I started off doing everything. I kind of had a baptism by fire when I first started. I did everything from trying to run an entire summer reading program, reference work, collection development. And this is somebody who didn't have any prior experience in the library. I was just kind of given it, and I made it work, and I realized how much I loved it. And so I was there for about 3 years, and then I later took a job as a teen library assistant where I specialized just in teenagers. This was probably the best 6 years of my life. I was there for 6 years simply because I really got to do what teen librarians get to do, which isn't just the programming and the collection development. It's getting to know the teens, creating those bonds, creating those relationships. And actually, I actually mentor 4 young adults who are absolutely amazing. I've known them since they were about 14. And the fact is that they come to rely on me in a sense, like as a big sister or as a confidant when it comes to adult matters. And it's just been a wonderful experience forming these relationships because most of them I still talk to. And it was during that time I realized that, you know what, I love helping teens in every aspect of life. And so after my job, I finally got a job as a librarian for the Pasadena Public Library, and that's been an even more wonderful experience because I've gotten to not only serve all ages, but I've got to work close with my colleague. Her name is Jane, and I actually thanked her in the book because she was pretty much one of my strongest rocks. She's the one who kind of pushed me to write this book, that we need to focus on, we need to take teen librarianship in a different direction, which is not just basing on what our assumptions of what teens want. We wanted to ask them, what do they need for us and who are we not serving? So it was during that time when we worked with our teen advisory board, we basically asked them, what do you want to do next and who are we not serving? And based on 4 groups, which we provided them with 4 different user groups, which was teen parents, teens with disabilities, teens experiencing homelessness, and teens experiencing mental illness. We kind of explained these user groups, and we wanted to provide them with options like, who do you think we should best serve next? And so we left the room, and we came back about 20 minutes later, and not only did these teens have, did they select a user group, they came up with a list of services and program ideas in those 20 minutes, and they unanimously chose teens experiencing mental illness, which mental illness is an issue that's very near and dear to my heart. So I was completely excited that they wanted to go in this direction. And so that's kind of how it came about in a nutshell. But my passion for working with youth has, you know, it's been my driving force in my career, basically.
Yeah, and we'll focus most of this kind of talking about mental health issues, but I do want to follow up on one thing that you're talking about, of that teen librarianship is really not just about reader's advisory and collection development and coming up with fun programs to do, but you really are engaging with them as a community. And there was even a quote you have in the book that librarians are not just advocates for literacy, but advocates for teens themselves. What led you to wanting to focus on mental health issues with teens and wanting to help them with that specific need? Because obviously teens have many, many needs, just like everybody has many, many needs, but they have their own specific needs. But what made you want to focus on mental health issues?
The reason why I focused on mental health is I myself was diagnosed with a mental health disorder. And most of the time I wondered, had I known as a teenager, would I have not experienced what I experienced as an adult? And more importantly, with the advances in technology, with the environment that teenagers are growing up with, they are constantly surrounded by horrible things that have a lasting impact on their mental health. For example, I mentioned this in the book, that the number two killer of teenagers is going to be mental illness because of things like bullying, because of dying by suicide, because of abuse, because of trauma. And more importantly, I think the reason why focusing now on the teen years is that it's starting to rear its ugly head basically during adolescence. And if teens, with their support systems, with their families, can kind of recognize that they may be experiencing this, that they can actually get the treatment, and then they can develop the coping skills they need. So by the time they become adults, which is typically when mental illness does, I guess you can say, you can't experience a full-blown episode of mental illness, they have the tools where it won't have such a detrimental impact, which could lead to loss of relationships, loss of a job, and even more importantly, their life, basically. So that's why it's important that I feel like if we can prepare teens for this, we can inform their families, we can encourage, you know, caregivers and mentors to really learn more about this and more and how to recognize it, then the chances of teens can actually lead productive lives and without having to worry about, are they going to be alive in the next 10 years?
Yeah. So then you decided to, as part of your work, is that you wrote a book. At what point did you decide that you wanted to put this together into a book, not just helping your teens there in Pasadena, but you wanted to write a book to help other teen librarians with the same issue?
You know, it's a great question, because kind of like my career, it was accidental. It all happened just by providence, simply because I was contacted by one of the editors from Libraries Unlimited, asking, basically saying that she had read a post that I wrote for the Young Adult Library Service Association blog, the YALSA blog. I actually wrote a post on what it is that our teens were doing. She had read that, and basically she liked my writing, and she asked me, did I want to write a book? And I'm kind of like, okay. I never thought that I would ever write. It was honestly not my intention, but this offer came about, and I'm like, you know what? What's the best? This is really the best way to kind of document what it is that we are doing that can be read by librarians all over the world, and hoping that maybe that it will inspire them to want to move in that direction. But if anything, give them the confidence that, yes, we are not mental health experts. We're not psychiatrists. We're not social workers. I get that, but we're information specialists. We're already doing it, especially when a patron comes up asking for information on where can I find treatment for this disorder, or, you know, how can I get affordable medication? We do have the skills to find that information. The same thing applies to mental illness. So that's kind of how the book came out. It's quite funny, actually.
And you mentioned there kind of one of the things that we even discussed before we started recording, that the role of librarianship is not to diagnose and treat people when they come in with mental illness, and that's not the point of the book. We need to work with them to help them out, and that's what our role is. A lot of times it's going to be as to refer them to a more appropriate service that can help them, but we need to know what those appropriate places are.
Exactly.
And you do actually, in the appendices of your book, you have a lot of resources that librarians can use to refer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And honestly, and this was one thing that I will kind of put out here for everybody, if you haven't got in the consumer health information specialization, which a lot of folks may not know about, that will really help you guide you more or less about the different resources that are available in regards to healthcare, where again, we're not trying to provide any kind of care. We're not trying to give information, you know, basically be doctors in a sense, but these kinds of resources have been proven reliable in healthcare information, basically. So it's the same process here. We're just providing information with the caveat that it's up to you to talk to your doctor about treatment and all that stuff.
So we're not going to dwell too much on this, but you do at the beginning of the book talk about teen brain development and adolescent developments. Can you talk a little bit about why you wanted to include that in the book?
I think it's important to include that element because diagnosing mental illness from my own research is very difficult in the adolescent years because of that thing called puberty and cognitive development in the early years. Because basically right now, and this was really interesting to read because I read some great resources, especially about I can't remember the name, I can remember it, about just from the neurologist point of view, what's happening during adolescence. So by the time a teenager is around the age of 12, 80% of their brain has been developed, but it's that 20%, which is the frontal lobe, which is in the front where reasoning develops, that is going to take a lot longer than 12 years of life. So the reason why I included that is because teens making decision-making skills aren't the best. And if you work with teens, you know what I'm talking about, because they literally are, think of it as trying to reformat the hard drive on an old PC. So it's just going to take a little bit longer. So I think that was important because it'll explain the fine line between a teen being a teen and a teen experiencing mental illness. And what I've learned from that is that behavior, yes, there's going to be some outlandish behavior. That's to be expected. It's going to be sporadic. It's going to be teens. But when during all of this, if something completely out of the ordinary happens and you're just like, why are you not being your teenager self? That's usually the cue that something might be going wrong in the realms of mental illness. So I think it's important to recognize that they're going to do things that are not going to make any sense to us, but it's when it's something completely out of the ordinary and it's not, I guess you can say, quote unquote, typical, that's when we need to realize that something else may be happening. And also, the fact is that there's over 200 classified types of mental disorders. I only touch I only just cover the major ones that teens may experience. I don't even go as far even into personality disorders when it comes to like borderline personality disorders and all those types of more infamous and harder to explain disorders, because those don't typically manifest into the adult years. So I thought it was important to cover those and just at least to get an idea of what it looks like and what teens may be experiencing, some of the factors and, you know, just some examples, like, you know, if you know teens may be experiencing any of these things, sit down, talk to them, find out what's going on, if they want help, and then guide them to care in that way. So that's pretty much the reason why I wanted to include it, just so you have a basic idea of what's going on in a teen's life and how it can happen. And this is what it looks like if they are experiencing a mental disorder.
Right. And some of this goes back to what we were talking about earlier of creating that kind of that way of working with the teens, is that they're going to feel more comfortable maybe talking to you if you have a better relationship with them. And you're not just there as the adult who's assigned to work with teens. And so you do it, but you want to have that relationship where they feel comfortable confiding in you if that's something that they need, that if they need that in their life.
Yes, especially if it's teens that, you know, your regular teens, it's important to clue into their behavior. And even if you don't have a relationship with them, you can still approach a teen and saying, "Hi, I see you come into time nine. My name is Deb, and I'm a librarian. And I noticed that you've been kind of acting differently lately." It's just have not so much the rapport, but also showing genuine interest and more importantly, care, like you actually care. And sometimes teens just need someone to say, "What's up? Are you okay?" And sometimes it can open the floodgates, and they're going to be a little more hesitant. But just letting them know that you're there, so that if they do feel like they can confide in you, that's just important. And also, throughout this whole process of writing this book, I've realized that teen librarians are some of the most passionate people that I know in this field. And the number one hardest thing that we're going to encounter is that we're going to try and want to fix everything. We want to make sure everything is okay. But we have to realize is that we have to be the one to offer it, but it's going to be up to the teen to take it. And unfortunately, things may not turn out the way that we want to, but we have to learn that we're there, but we can't fix it. We just have to try our best. My hope is that they're constantly talking to you. So if you notice something is off, then maybe you can kind of be like, "Why is that happening? And do you need help?" and that kind of thing. But if it's, I think no matter what, whatever teen comes into your room or in your space and and something seems off, we should, you know, just have the confidence to go up there and be like, "Hey, are you okay?" That's my hope.
Yeah, because I think you mentioned this a little bit in the book as well, that not every teen is going to want to have that relationship with you, because to a lot of teens, even if you're just in your 20s or 30s, you're like old and they don't want anything to do with you. And so, but again, if they're in need, they might still reach out to you if they know that there's an available thing there. So, but they may not want to sit down and do special handshakes with you and talk about
exactly.
Marvel movies or whatever with you.
right. Yeah.
And you do talk about how librarians can assist teens experiencing mental health crises. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I had the fortunate, I was fortunate, excuse me, that I got what we call, it was provided by a company called Mental Health First Aid USA. Our public health department got a grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration Services. It's called SAMHSA. And we went through an 8-hour training on youth mental health first aid. So what is mental health first aid? Basically, think of it as CPR, but for those experiencing mental health crisis. So it was through that training that I was able to recognize what a crisis may look like and the different steps that we can take, which is, first of all, be calm. Second of all, assess, do you think the teen is in danger? Do you think anyone else around the teen is in danger? And if you need to, call request for assistance if you think that's necessary. Walk over to the teen and basically just ask them, "I noticed something has been off. Are you okay?" And then sit down with them. And then obviously there's different techniques that you can take when you're talking to a teen, which is you need to be careful. Especially if a teen is, if a teen is visibly frightened. So knowing the cues, listening. The biggest part about mental first aid is listening. Trying not to pass judgment, trying not to fix the teen. And it's just trying to, and asking the right questions, which is, you know, repeat what they're saying and ask them, "So this, you've been feeling like this for a while. Do you feel like hurting yourself? Do you feel like you're going to do it today?" It's just, again, just sit there and being supportive and then finally asking, "Do you need help? Because I can help you." And if you know for a fact that they're frightened or ashamed, just reassure them that you care, that you don't want something to happen to them. Or if you want to, you can offer to call their parents to say that. And more importantly, I think it's we need to stress that if they have a support system at home, that they know that their support system, you know, would want them to feel what they're feeling or do what they want to do. And it's important that they know so they can get them help. So it's actually, it's crazy because these are all, I'm saying all these things right now, and this could happen within a 2-minute conversation. So it's going to be hard, but I think when it comes to a crisis, we have to be the calm ones, but we also have to be the one to know when to give control over to the teen and when to take that control, just so that something bad happens. So.
Well, and that's why you think about these things in advance, and so that you're not kind of taken off guard maybe if it happens. But if you've thought it through and maybe done some training even with your staff, that that you understand what's coming, and that'll help you a little more if you've thought about it in advance.
Exactly. And that's why I completely stress in the book that even though this is a training and it does cost a lot of money, if you build a good relationship with your public health department, you're going to have people, more than likely, you're going to have people who have masters in social work who can provide training for your staff to at least recognize the basics and when to call for help. So that's why I really stress getting to know your public health departments.
One of the other ways that you mentioned in the book of getting, not only the idea of just being open to your teens and approaching them one-on-one, but of having like a whole initiative, a teen mental health initiative. Can you talk a little bit about why, what that would look like, and why librarians should consider creating something like this?
The Teen Mental Health Initiative, at the core of that particular mental health initiative was not only to try and reach teens that are experiencing mental illness, but it was also about empowering your teen volunteers, your core group of teens, to develop their leadership skills and the fact that they will be advocating for teens who need the most, because more than likely every teen that you know, that you see or that you talk to probably has someone either in their family or even their own immediate social circles that have some kind of mental illness. So really, with this mental health initiative, we're trying to accomplish two things, which is to provide services and programs for teens that need it, but also to, and I love this phrase, empower your other teen volunteers to be a voice for those. And as I mentioned earlier on how we developed the initiative. So basically my colleague and I, we decided that we were going to take a step back and reevaluate our services and find out from the teens themselves that what is it that they want to accomplish as a group, or what the library can do for them. And so I highly recommend if you want to create an initiative similar to this, focusing on other issues that do affect teens, you really do need to involve your teens. You need to ask them those questions. What do you want from us, basically? Which is kind of, actually a couple years ago, the Young Adult Library Services Association released a new strategic plan where it completely flipped the model of teen services, in the sense that even though we're specialists, we're developing services and programs based on what we know, we're just going to ask the teens what they want. We're not teens. We don't know what they want, you know? Let's just ask them. So with this particular mental health initiative, it involved a lot of work amongst the teenagers, but also, and especially with this particular kind of initiative, you can't do it on your own. I think what you need to do is, if you want to move in this direction, you really need to either encourage your entire department to join you, because it is a lot of work and it's just not going to be done overnight, but try and find those passionate few, even if it's not within your own department, within your other staff, reach out to them. Because that's who's going to be your driving force behind it. Because teens can, they provide the ideas and they provide, they can be at these programs. And when it comes to the actual implementation process, it's a little bit harder for them. So, so definitely engage anyone basically in your organization that has a passion for this, because that's what's going to make it a success. And along with that, partnerships are important, because the reason why ours has been so successful is that we have a very strong, like I mentioned earlier, we have a very strong relationship with our public health department, because they have helped us develop some of these aspects. And we even have a library case manager that works in our library to help those who need help, in essence. So having those partnerships and knowing your community and knowing who might want to be involved in it. So It's from every aspect, and I know it seems daunting. It's just that it can be done if, you have a plan, and also more importantly, allow yourself the time to accomplish the different parts of your plan, but also rely on your partners, rely on organizations within your own city or within your own county that can help you provide these services, but also really rely on your teams, because they can only come up with the ideas. They can help you publicize it. They can take your flyers to the schools, and they can be the voice for the teens. You know, they may know someone saying, hey, guess what? The library has these great resources if you feel like you can't control your anxiety or anything like that. So it's just, it's a massive group effort, basically.
Yeah, and then making that all more explicit, you talk about making sure that it's the library is a safe space to talk about these issues and to people to feel comfortable there with those issues, and not only just creating a policy of a safe space, but making sure you have signs up to let people know that's what this is. Not just the teen area is like that, but the library itself is a safe space.
Definitely, and I think that's. People just assume libraries, you know, have for years been safe spaces, and it's just kind of been assumed that this is a safe space. But when you have those signs, it's a very powerful reminder that this is who we are, what we will, and what we do, but also what we will not tolerate in our buildings. And I think that's really important.
And then you also talk about building and promoting better services for teens, and that's sort of creating new programs that have this mindset in mind, but also kind of adapting more traditional programming to address mental health issues.
Yeah, and the reason why I kind of kicked it off with adapting what you have is you don't have to make changes overnight, because we're already doing programs that can touch on these issues, and this is especially for libraries that may be hesitant in moving in this route and focusing on these issues. Because there's all these mitigating factors, like, you know, is it an issue that you're not quite sure that your administration is going to be behind, or if it's going to be, you know, a community that doesn't have a lot of mental health services as it is. So it's start with what you have and then work from there. Because, again, when you want to move into more specific services, like if you want to start like a counseling service, which, you know, honestly is still in our master plan at my library, because there's just going to be so much involved with who's going to provide that service and all these other different things. But, you know, you want to take what you have and incorporate that and see where it takes you from there.
Yeah, and you talk about incorporating this also not only into in-branch programs, but outreach programs as well. So when you're already kind of out in the community and you're creating, again, new partnerships, but then use the partnerships you've already got. So.
Yes. So take your flyers, take everything that you have, take your team. Like, this is a great opportunity if you're involving your teens in this particular type of initiative. Take them with you on your outreaches and let them be your voice, because people are going to believe them more than they are going to believe us, unfortunately, because they are teens.
Right.
This is a great opportunity to just to really get them on fire about something that's important, that's going to have a huge impact on them now.
Yeah, and one other important thing is that, like you said, sometimes you might have to, you almost will, for something, a big initiative, have to justify to your administration or to the stakeholders somewhere at some point. You're going to have to justify it. So one of the things you talk about, you have a chapter about planning, of having a master plan, of evaluating your outcomes and actively engaging with your partners and documenting, evaluating, things like that. Can you talk about the importance of that?
So as you start the planning process as you create a plan, you need to think, where exactly are we going with this whole thing? Is this going to be something that we just want to touch on for a couple of months, or is this going to be something that we want to make long term? So as you plan, think about the goals of this particular initiative. And as you work with your partners, actively engage them and ask them, so this is a great thing we got going on. Do you want to keep doing this? And if they say, yeah, we want to keep doing this, then this is where you need to come up with what I call your master plan, which, you know, it's like I said, it's going to take a lot of patience. We're looking far into the future, but it's also going to take different phases to get from point A to point B. So when you're implementing your plan, when you're doing your programs, make sure you gather your data. Make sure that you hold on to your surveys, review those surveys. You know, you don't have to know them by heart, but as long as, because as you do programs and as you move forward with your plan, you're going to want to reevaluate what is it you're doing, and you want to look at those surveys, and because you're going to ask for suggestions, obviously, on how you can do things better. And then maybe you're like, you know what? We did this program in the beginning, and we didn't think it was very successful, but based on the comments from people wanting it, maybe we should do it again. So all of this information is where it's going to take you into the future. So, and then more importantly, share all this feedback with your partners, and maybe they might have a better idea on how to do it, you know, and maybe they have suggestions on how they can continue this relationship. And more importantly, tap into their networks, because obviously these folks, they're in the same business as other people. So maybe they can bring other players to the table that can help provide services for your teens. So it's just this massive, it's like 6 degrees of separation that mm-hmm. you may already know somebody, but then they know somebody and then they know somebody. It's an exciting process to see where it leads, but you do need a plan. Is it something that you can't think of overnight? And you also need to be realistic. Like, can I see my library doing this 5 years from now, or is this just going to be something that we're going to focus on now? And then once we're done, we're going to move on to the next issue.
Yeah, because that's important with almost any kind of program that you do, but it's especially with something like this when you're playing something new and big, that you really want to succeed like this. So. Mm-hmm. You, I mean, because mental health, quote unquote, is a very big tent, so you don't want to be saying, oh, we're going to focus all of our programs on OCD, and then it's more that you needed to be doing suicide awareness or something like that. So yeah. You want to make sure the programs you're doing are successful and what your community actually needs.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, when you first start, it's just kind of like, we're just going to, you know, we're going to talk. You can start off very simple from, what is mental illness? What does it look like? How can you help? And then I recommend that you start very broad before you become really granular, because you don't quite know what it is the teens are looking for. Because with our experience is that teens already know this stuff. Believe it or not, they know what mental illness is, but we need to find out for them what it is that they want specifically. And what we've learned is they want information and even some kind of informal training on how to help a friend who might be experiencing a panic attack, or my dad has depression, or I know somebody being abused. They want to know the meat and the bones on how to help somebody. And so it's again, when you're implementing it and you're getting your feedback and really talking to your audience, this is where you can get granular.
Right. That's where those outcomes measurements comes in, that you're evaluating what you're doing and you're getting more granular as you go along, as you said. So, and then you wrap up the book with something that I think is really important and sometimes people forget. And that's to take care of yourself as well, because it's the whole analogy of on the airplane, you put the air on the person, on your child next to you first, and then you put your own, or you put it on yourself first, and then you help the next person, because you have to be safe yourself before you can help anybody else.
Yes, and I will admit, I feel like a hypocrite for writing that chapter, because I'm not the best when it comes to self-care.
It's aspirational.
I'm trying, but the reason why I wrote that is that, you know, at the end of the day, we are still human beings, and we have our own needs, especially our own mental health needs. So whether you're constantly bombarded with teens and their issues, and you're just stressed out, and you feel like you're going to punch a hole through the wall, it's important that we know when to turn it off. And what I have learned in my experience over the years is that, you know, I've met some teens that are going through some real horrible things, and it would just bring me down. But I realized, you know what? It's going to be okay. You know, you can help them as much as you want. You can be that guiding light. You can be that inspiration. You can be that help, but you have to know when to just let go. And that's normally, especially when it comes to teens with mental illness, teen librarians, we are a passionate group of young people. It's just that we have to realize that we can't save everyone and we can't solve everything. So I'm not saying that, there's nothing I can do about it. It's not as easy as that. It's just knowing at the end of the day that you've tried and you're hoping that you had some kind of impact in that teen. And then you can help, guide them, but you also have to realize you're not their therapist. You're not their parent. You are there to support them in every aspect. And I can't remember if I touched upon this, but some teens, you're just going to have to be like, there's only so much I can do for you. Here's the information. you know, let me know if you have any questions, but you have to actually build those boundaries. And that's the hardest thing when you work with teenagers is those boundaries. But it's like with parenting, you know, you try to, you try to set those boundaries and they're going to try them. And they will. that's what teenagers do. That's what they're trying to build their autonomy. They're trying to find out who they are and how, what their role is in this world. But you also have to be, you have to stand firm and set up your boundaries. So, so taking that time. So when you get home, and one thing that I'm going to recommend to everybody is when you get home, you leave work at work and you come home and do your thing. But it's also important to develop those habits where if you feel like you're stressing out to the nth degree, take a walk or, you know, engage in activities that are going to make, you know, bring you some kind of relief or even joy. And honestly, like you have to, when you work with youth in general, find what it is that makes you happy and cling to that. So if there's a reason why my staff is, you know, I have to watch like 4 funny animal videos a day just so I can keep my sense of humor. So, but it's also, it's helping me regulate my emotions because the last thing I want to do is be so burned out that, you know, here comes a, you know, an anxiety attack. We don't want that. Not because of, we don't want to experience mental health disorders because of our patrons. You know, that's not what this job is about. We're here to help, but it's also learning to care for ourselves.
Yes. So thank you, Keyboard Cat.
Yeah. Right? I actually have one sitting in my lap right now. So this is
helpful. All right. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about the book. I think it's obviously a really important thing for not only it's especially important for teen librarians because they're the ones who are dealing with it, but all staff could get some benefit out of this because everybody at public libraries encounters this. And even, I mean, school librarians obviously are dealing with working with teens every day. So it's something that all librarians can learn from. So appreciate you writing the book and coming on to talk about it.
Thank you for having me.
If people wanted to follow up with you, how could they get in touch with you to find out more?
I am currently in the process of building a Facebook page for the book. I'm hoping to publish this. It should be out by the time this interview airs. So I can be found on Facebook. You just have to search for Serving Teens with Mental Illness. And you can contact me through there or I'm trying to think. I think that's all that you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Deb Takahashi if you need to get a hold of me. And that's what I have so far.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Deb.
Thank you.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta. Views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of my place of work or the place of work of guests. For past interviews, visit circulatingideas.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening and keep circulating your ideas. Thanks again to Mometrics Test Preparation for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. To get 10% off your first purchase and a free demo, visit goelibrary.com and use that promo code podcast. That's goelibrary.com, promo code podcast.